So when we look at this question of different ways of relating to time, it can get a little confusing because Rinpoche introduces all of these different aspects of time and different aspects of knowledge and different aspects of the self. And if you felt you had to keep track of all of them, I think it would be difficult. But it is useful to have all of those categories on hand. But for our purposes right now, we can say that there's two main aspects of time that we're looking at. One of them is the time that goes from moment to moment. So there's this moment, and then there's the next moment, and the next moment. And it's very puzzling and confusing to try to ask, you know, how are they related to each other? If we were standing outside time, you know, then it makes sense to talk about past, present, and future, which is how people usually talk about it. If we're inside those moments of time, it's very difficult. That's the place where you say it's a puzzle and it's hard to understand. But that's one way of talking about time, is moments of time that follow each other in a sequence. The other way of talking about time is the movement that gets us from one moment to the next. Okay, somebody has a very nice echo there. Can somebody turn their speaker off who just turned it on or who just joined us? Okay. I think that'll work. So, okay, there's still that echo, some terrible echo. Could that be Yolaine since you just joined us? If so, could you turn your speakers on the off? Okay. Sounds okay. Okay. This second aspect of time is, you know, in a lot of ways, it's the more important one, it seems like. I mean, the other one's important for making sense out of things, one moment after another. And we can look back and say that was the past, and we can look forward and say next week will be the future, and so on. So that's important. But if you say, what is it that's special about time? You know, what's the difference between a universe in which there's time and a universe in which there isn't? It's the dynamic of time. It's the flow from one moment to another. So those are the two aspects of time that we really are looking at. And what I want to call our attention to here, because it's always possible to arrive at this situation or to do these readings and say, well, I can kind of follow the arguments, but I don't understand their significance. You know, what does it have to do with me and my experience, which after all, for very good reasons, is what we're interested in, me and my experience. So we have these two kinds of time, and the question is, how does it relate? How does that relate to my experience? And we've already talked about that a number of times this week, but it's so important, in this program, but it's so important that it's good to keep coming back to it. The point is that we're trying to look at our own freedom, really. We're trying to look at what's possible for us in our lives. Because if you just look at the way that time unfolds from one moment to the next, you get stuck in a situation where you have no control over your life. The one moment to the next, you know, there's two possibilities. You could say one moment and then the next moment and then the next moment, and you ask, well, what's the relationship between them? Not the dynamic. That's the other side of time. But what's the relationship between those two moments? So one possibility is to say that it's random. It just kind of shows up. Who knows? You know? And that's not our experience, because in fact, there is a sequence from past to present to future. So if we leave that one aside, then we say, well, there's a relationship between the moments of time. What's the nature of that relationship? And the answer that we have you know, and I'm not sure it's in the reading exactly this way, but just our ordinary answer to that is that there's a causal relationship between one moment and the next. Rinpoche gives an example in one of the books that must be knowledge of time and space. He says, well, I'm holding a rent check in my hand, so there must be a tenant. You know, somebody must have given me that check. So here I am in the present. I think the example's clear. But it's the same example, or it's the same situation that comes up over and over and over again. I'm in this situation. It must be because of all the things that happened in the past that that brought about this situation. So the basic answer to asking how are moments, these linear moments, related to each other, is to say that they're related in a cause and effect way. The past causes the future. Now, that's only half the answer, but that will do for now. The point that I want to make right now is that if that's the case, if what's going on in this moment is caused by the past, then we find ourselves in the situation that we know very well in kind of a Western philosophy way, but also just the kind of things people think about as they're growing up. If this present moment has been caused by the past moment, then it seems like I have no choice. It seems like my life is completely determined. So let's take a specific example. You know, if you have a fight with someone, and then that fight ends, and you go away, but you're feeling very agitated, right? And that quality of feeling agitated is going to last for a while, and maybe you'll try to do something about it, but mostly, you say, you just feel agitated and upset, and you keep playing back, let's imagine, you keep going back over the same events, you know, the fight, and you replay it in your mind, and you have the conversation, and you imagine how you could have done it differently. And all of that has been caused by the past moment of when you had the fight, right? And that's what I mean when I'm talking about freedom. We get into a fight, and then we react to it. Or, you know, someone hits us on the head and it hurts. That's just on the material level, so it's not so very interesting. The difficulty with that is exactly on this level of freedom. You don't have any way to take charge of your life because you're always just reacting to everything that's already happened. And what's already happened has already happened. You can't control it. So that way of looking at time is really depressing. And yet, you know, that is the standard way that science looks at time, that, you know, that our culture looks at time. We don't completely believe it. We do think that we're free to make some choices. So for instance, you might say, you know, I had a fight, but it's up to me whether I get angry about it or not. I mean, anybody who's taking this program probably has some sense that it's possible, at least sometimes, to control your reactions, right? But if you look at it in terms of time, if you look at it in terms of the ordinary understanding, that actually makes no sense. Because the way that we react in this moment to the fight that we had a moment ago, first of all, the fight causes our reaction, and then our way of dealing with that is also caused by who we are and how we've been. It's the issue of determinism. That's how it gets talked about in Western philosophy. It's very discouraging, very depressing. So there's an alternative to that, and this is not the final alternative. I mean, I'm not exactly saying this is how we deal with that problem. But there's an alternative, which is to say that in some sense, the self is not bound by that linear sequence of time. And that's the purpose, you could say, or that's the significance of that story that I included from a well-known Buddhist text. It's from I think I said a little more about it in the German version than I did in the English, but this is an excerpt from a text that was written about maybe 500 years after the time of the Buddha, and it's in the form of a dialogue between a king and a monk. It's called The Questions of King Milinda, or just The Questions of Milinda. And in that story, which you all had in the orientation, the king asks a question about supernormal powers, about being able to move through space without taking time. And Nagasena says, well, if you think about where you were born, he asks the king to think about where he was born in kind of a subtle way, kind of an interesting, tricky way, but he asks the king to think about where he was born, and the king does, and he says, well, you were just there, weren't you? So you just, you know, it didn't take any time to get from here to there. And that is actually a good model for a certain way we have of thinking about time. The self moves through time without being subject to the linear sequence of time. So it's very different, for instance, if you imagine a rock. And you take a rock and you throw it up in the air, and it falls down and hits the ground. All of that is controlled by the linear sequence of time. We assume that the rock doesn't have any conscious experience. You know, some people might disagree. Some people do disagree. But generally it seems like the rock doesn't have any experience. So it's completely subject to the linear flow of time. You know, there's at one moment it's at this point in space, and at the next moment it's at the next point in space, and then it hits the ground, and it rolls a little bit. All of that is just moment, 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 moment. But the self is different. Because of the issue of memory in this case, and you could say the same thing about daydreams, you could say the same thing about plans, the self is always just skipping around in time. You know, it's kind of like you could almost say it's like being drunk in time, you know. Instead of walking a straight line, you stagger to this direction, you stagger in that direction, you go here, you go there. The self is constantly moving different places in time. So you say, aha, that's a different way of being in time. And that's interesting. But the problem with it is that we don't have any control over that either. And that's a little bit more subtle point, but it's, of course, very easy to see in our experience. Right now, you know, you're listening to me, but I bet if you looked back over the last 5 minutes, you would find lots of times, lots of moments in which your mind wandered away from the present experience. You know, maybe what I'm saying is so gripping that didn't happen. But ordinarily, you know, I mean, I guess let's not make me feel embarrassed or you feel embarrassed. If you imagine, for instance, when you were in school and you were listening to a teacher, you know, most of the time maybe you were paying attention, but a lot of the time your mind was wandering off in different places. And the point is, you have no control over that. So it's a different kind of control or loss of control, but the issue is still there. If we're looking for freedom, then saying, well, the self isn't bound by objective time or descriptive time, to use some of the versions that Rinpoche gives. If you say that, and you say, okay, so the self is free to move around in time, but it's not free to decide where to move. And the dialogue between Milinda and Nagasena is an interesting example of that, because it kind of proves the point. It's not the king who decides to think about where he was born. It's Nagasena who tells him. Right? Nagasena asks him about it, and the king, without whether he wants to or not, just automatically thinks about it. So, you know, in the same way, if I say to you, think about where you went to college, you think of some place, you know, you really have no control, but it's because I told you, you know. And, you know, there doesn't have to be somebody standing outside saying, now think about this, now think about that. I mean, that's not our experience usually. But it's also not that we're doing that. What's happening is that it seems to be happening in some other sequence, over which we have no control. So there's the objective dimension of time going from one moment to the next, 9:01, 9:02, 9:03. And then there's this other sequence, which is completely non-linear, but also outside of our control. So that's the problem. That's the, both of those ways of thinking about time. And we haven't yet gotten to the dynamic of time. That's a different question, you could say. But both of those ways of looking at how time unfolds leave us with the conclusion that we have no control, we have no freedom. We can't do what we want to do with our lives. And that's a very fundamental issue and concern in TSK. I think I've mentioned before that in one of the books that Rinpoche writes, the subtitle he uses is The Liberation of the Modern Mind. And that issue of liberation is really important. This is not some intellectual exercise that we're doing. This is a question about how we can be free, about how we can be in control, although control is not a great word, but how we can be in control of our own lives. So let me stop there and see if anybody has any questions or comments about that.
Well, it's exciting.
Exciting. Well, good. It should be. Good. That's the right response. I think it is anyway. So somebody would come along and say, oh, well, you're just excited because, that's your past conditioning, blah, blah. But no, there is a certain kind of answer to this kind of difficulty. And the answer is to say, well, but I do have a choice. That's the answer you could say to the question of causality. You say, well, yeah, okay, I don't understand. It seems like everything is determined, but I have a very, very strong sense that I can, in fact, choose what to do. For instance, I chose to take this program, and, I choose when I'm going to sit and read and how to, like that, okay. That's a partial answer, but it's not much of an answer, especially when it comes to this second issue of freedom or determinism, because the mind jumps here and there, and we don't know much about it. So, anybody else want to say anything?
Hey, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On the chat, I left messages on the chat.
Okay. You mean where you're saying what I struggle with is how to relate my sense? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
The next question.
Yeah, that basically is going to be where we're headed. It won't be quite the next question, maybe, but we will get there. Before we stop today, we will at least raise that issue, because there's the dynamic of time and then this linear or non-linear, determined, not free sense of time. And how do we put those together? So let's go through the analysis a little bit. Was there somebody else wanted to say something, right?
Yeah, I wondered, you described a mechanism where the mind is sort of gets yanked here and hither and yon, and we are in control. It seems sort of within that sort of general distractibility, we can set ourselves an objective.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep going back to that too. And in an hour's time, there's lots of daydreams, but there's also, you keep returning to something you've assigned yourself as worth pursuing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. And in fact, people do it all the time. That's normally when people have jobs, they have something they have to get done. I mean, whether it's in a working situation or doing some job around the house. And so, yes, in a general sense, that is to say, if we look in a little bit broader sense, as you said, over the course of an hour, maybe we spend a certain amount of our time doing what we actually intended to do, right? And then we spend some smaller percentage of our time, or maybe it's not smaller, not doing that. So actually Rinpoche and I can't remember where it is right now. It's not in the TSK books, but he does this kind of analysis and he says, well, okay, so you have an hour and during that hour you want to accomplish something. And how much of your time actually goes into accomplishing it? And he says, well, so there's the time when you're thinking about other things to do, there's the time when you're remembering, there's the time when you're planning, there's the times when you're daydreaming. So out of that hour, if you're lucky, maybe half the time you're actually focused on what you want to do. Nonetheless, it's true that it's not completely random. Half the time, you are really focused on what you intended to do. And when people practice meditation, Elaine says that's in Mastering Successful Work, and I think that's right. It is. So if people are interested, they can look at it there. If you want to understand, or what I started to say, sorry, with meditation, if people focus on or do a meditative practice, one way of describing what meditation is about is that it's about focusing yourself more on your own values and goals and intentions. You know? So that the mind doesn't just kind of wander at random. So it is possible to do that. It is possible to train the mind. And that actually goes in this direction of tuning in to the dynamic of time. But what we're looking at right now is why is that so difficult? You know? Why is it that we stay, that we lose track or wander away so much of the time, even if we do have some ability to control it or direct it? And it has, that's where this analysis, that way of looking at time, is really helping. That's the purpose of looking at it in this way. Another place to look at that, another practical example that is not when we have a job to do, but when we have a choice to make. Let's say you've decided you're going to get up and meditate. This is a very typical thing in our community and among people who study at the Nyingma Institute. They say, okay, I'm going to get up and meditate every morning. So some mornings they get up and meditate and other mornings they don't. I mean, maybe eventually you establish a routine, a discipline, and you do it every day. But for a lot of people, it doesn't work that way. Their good intentions, are not realized in practice. Or does any other example, you've decided, you're going to spend the evening reading and studying, but then in fact you turn on the television and watch whatever show is on television or some favorite show. Or you decided that you're not going to have any snacks or you're not going to have dessert, but in fact you end up having dessert. So that's another example of choice. It's not a question of training or disciplining the mind, but it's a question of not being able to act on our own values, our own concerns. One way of describing that is in the way we did before, there's kind of a causality that we don't have any control over. Or you could say there's kind of a jumping around that we don't have any control over. We have this intention to do something, and that's what's going on in this moment. But then in the next moment, there's the wish to do the opposite. And we find that that one somehow is more powerful. Right? So I think Tu just asks the question, how does making choices relate to linear time and being in control? That's what I was actually just trying to address. So maybe by the time you finish typing, I hope that answered the question. Does that answer the question? It's not like I can answer the question and say, here's how it all works, but I was trying to address that question anyway. Tu, does that seem okay? I guess you're not speaking live, so, okay. Tu says okay. Okay, how nice. So let's look for a minute at how Rinpoche analyzes this. He does this in terms of of the narrator and the owner, right? So here we have the self, and there's the self as the narrator, and there's the self as the owner. Right? So the thing about the narrator, as he says, is the narrator is the one who is always explaining, in a sense, what's going on. I mean, obviously not in words, necessarily. Sometimes we tell ourselves what we're doing, very much in words. But more often, it's not in words, but it's there's still this sense-making activity going on. And whatever's going on in the moment, the narrator says, so that's why this makes sense. That's a way to think of it, you know? It's like if you've decided you're not going to have a snack, something to eat, before going to bed. But then you find that you're in the kitchen and you're having a snack anyway. So the narrator's busy making sense out of that. It's not that the narrator controls it, but the narrator kind of makes us feel okay about it. That's the purpose. The narrator tells some little story like, oh, I deserve a snack, or I don't know, it'll help me sleep, or whatever we say. So the narrator has that job of kind of making everything all right. And in that sense, you could say that the narrator looks backwards, right? Looks at the narrator says it's all right because this is the story that explains why it's fine to be what's going on is happening now. Of course, sometimes if things are not going well, the narrator may be explaining what's terribly wrong. That has more to do usually with outside events, but that's the basic idea of what the narrator does. The other one is the self as the owner. And the owner is the one who says, I'm deciding to do this. All right? So I'm having that snack before bedtime, and the narrator is explaining why that's all right, but the owner's the one saying, I'm doing this. Now, very often, I think, and we're talking on kind of a psychological level, and I think this is exactly the right level for people to look at. I mean, for you to look at in your own experience, you know, this is a place, I think, where it's really valuable and quite straightforward during the course of the week, during the course of, you know, living your life, to ask these questions. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Am I in control? What's the story that's being told? Am I really owning what I'm doing? And sometimes, you know, we don't own what we're doing. That sounds like kind of a psychobabble way to say it. I don't know if those of you who aren't native English speakers may not know that term, but it sounds like the sort of thing people write about when they write self-help books. But, you know, they're not always crazy. sometimes we don't own what we're doing in the sense of, let's take that example of standing in the kitchen, getting ready to do something you had told yourself earlier you weren't going to do, namely have some snack, right? The narrator is busy explaining why that's necessary, or not necessary, but why that makes sense. The owner may kind of be in hiding. You know, the self, as the one who takes responsibility for the act, may actually be looking the other way. Does that make sense? Do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, I think it makes sense to people. I know in my experience, if I look, you know, you just kind of pretend not to notice what you're doing, you know. Pretend that it's not you. There used to be a comedy show, a television show a long time ago in this country, And there was a line that the one of the main characters always said. He said, "The devil made me do it." Well, you know, it's kind of like that. It's like the owner refuses to take responsibility. There's actually lots of examples like that in popular culture. There's a lot of you know. Sometimes I think it'd be really nice to analyze various things in popular culture from a TSK perspective, because you can learn an awful lot, you know, looking at songs, looking at jokes, looking at movies. You see these patterns over and over again, and sometimes it's easier to see it in when it's at a little bit of a distance from you. But anyway, I think we all have some sense of that, that sometimes the owner is really just saying, is really stepping away or turning, you know, averting its eyes. The self doesn't want to look at what it's doing. So there's an example of a place where you can see the narrator and the owner not operating on the same level. Now, the kind of key point about all this, beyond the analysis that we've been doing, is that all of this seems to be happening in a way, again, that doesn't give us any freedom, you know. And Rinpoche talks about this in terms of the narrative, the story that the narrator tells, and he says that really if we're busy telling stories, there's no freedom. What he says is actually that the narrative recreates what's already the case, right? It just, we get stuck in our same old patterns. And the reason that we get stuck in the pattern is because it's my pattern. And, you know, I was just pointing to a place where the narrator and the owner are separate, but in fact, the owner's identity is also part of a story that the narrator has told. You know, there was a comment, I think Michael wrote a comment on the website a while ago saying, well, the story, how can the self tell the story of the self? I guess I don't want to go into that right now, but I think if you look at it in terms of what we're talking about now, it makes sense. So if it doesn't, why don't you pursue it on the web, and I will try to join into the web discussion rather than trying to go into it right now. So the self is bound by this story, is bound by this narrative, and so even if there weren't these problems about the self not being free because of determinism or because the sequence of going from moment to moment is something we can't control, the self wouldn't be free because it's committed, it's been committed through the narrative to a particular story. So if we want to address that, we have to be able to go to a different dimension, a different aspect of time. And that's where we get to the dynamic of time. I think that's basically where I want to end up today. We'll talk about it a couple minutes more. The story is a way of taking hold of time and pinning it down. You know? There's a very nice image that William James, who was an American philosopher and psychologist who lived about 100 years ago, a very nice image that he uses, not quite in this context, but it's the same thing. He says, he's talking about psychologists who are trying to understand how the mind works. And he says, you know, the mind is always moving. It's a stream. And James is the one who came up with the term stream of consciousness. He says, the mind is always this active and dynamic stream. But when people try to understand it, what they do is, he says, it's as though you went down to the stream with a bucket and you put your bucket in the stream and came up with a bucket full of water. And then you spent all your time analyzing the bucket of water and tried to understand the stream in that way. And what you would have lost, of course, was exactly the stream, the dynamic. So he's talking there about psychologists, about people who are trying to understand the mind, but it's very much the same for individuals, for each of us. What we do is we assign this identity. We say, this is who I am, this is what's going on, and those are really two aspects of the same thing. And you know, now we've got our bucket, and we pretend to ignore the stream, even though the stream is really still flowing, we don't have any way to tune into it. And that's what, you know, Rinpoche points to the consequence of that on page 189. He says, because we've done that, our awareness is dim and our concentration is lacking. That's just a short phrase, but it's a good summary. You know, even when we try to take control in the sense of saying, I'm going to direct my life, I'm going to do what I think has value, I'm going to focus on the things that I'm doing, I'm going to be tuned in to the dynamic of my own experience. Even when we try to do that, because we're approaching our experience in terms of a narrative and an identity that we've assigned to ourselves and the identities that we assign to the world, it all gets tuned down, it all gets reduced, and we've lost track of the dynamic of time. And that's all summarized in that phrase, leaving awareness dim and concentration lacking. So, at the end of the chapter, Rinpoche points to the possibility that it could all be different. And what he does is return to the witness. So, you know, several weeks ago we introduced this idea of the witness. And we said, the witness seems to be the guarantee of reality. And then we've been exploring that, and the main thing that we've been looking at is that what happens is that the self says, the witness, right, that's me. The self tries to turn or to own that sense of reality. I'm the one who experiences, I'm the one who assigns identities, I'm the one who tells stories. I'm simplifying a little now. And that's the witness. And what Rinpoche says at the end of this chapter is he says, just on the top of the last page, 190, he says, perhaps the witness is not just another story. Perhaps the force behind its testimony is a direct expression of the dynamic energy implicit in the flow from past to future and the corresponding vitality of the present. So, what he is offering here, what he's suggesting here, is that if we could look at that dynamic of time, not the dynamic that kind of throws us here and there into our daydreams and our memories and our plans and so on, but the kind of underlying dynamic, that connects us back into this deeper sense of the reality, or the realness, not the reality, but the realness of the witness. That's the possibility that he's holding out. And I think in the next chapter we'll go more in that direction. So we've been exploring exploring this in terms of these two, you know, challenging exercises, exercise 22 and exercise 23, which basically just ask us if we can tune into the dynamic. You know, forget about the moments. What about the dynamic? That's really what exercises 22 and 3 ask us. And the other way to look at this is what we talked about a little earlier, which is to look at all the places, just really, really track the activity of the self and see how these conflicts come up between the things we want to do and the things we actually do, between wanting to focus on something and getting sidetracked or lost. All of those places where we realize that the story, you know, part of the story is things are going pretty well, things are working pretty well, I'm pretty much in control, and none of that is really true. So it's very good to get a sense of how that works. Okay, so we didn't really have a chance to talk about people's experience with the exercises, but let me just open it up for questions or comments on what we've just been talking about or on the exercises we've been doing. Anybody want to say anything? Okay, then you'll just have to continue the conversation online as they say nowadays, when you listen to a news show, they always say, well, at least the one I listen to says, you can continue the conversation online. That's the idea. So let's do that. I will write up an orientation, which in part goes back into those possibilities we were just talking about, the ways of exploring this. I hope you enjoy doing the exploration. It's got such a wonderful payoff. It really is a question of freedom. So, thank you very much.